Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 253 of the Family Medicine Rocks podcast for Thursday, April 26th, 2012. On today's show, it is just 1 week until the AAFP-NCSC meeting coming up in Kansas City next week, one of the largest family medicine advocacy meetings of the entire year. Very excited about that. Coming up in just a few moments will be my good friend, Dr. Jerry Tolbert, who's from Kentucky, and this will be his very first NCSC meeting coming up. And yes, that's right, I will be giving him his orientation to the meeting right here live on the air. And we'll also talk about my social media talk coming up next week, and we'll also be talking about something called direct primary care. What is that? We'll be talking about that. And a lot more coming up on episode 253 of the Family Medicine Rocks podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, the president of the American Academy of Family Physicians, Dr. Glenn Strom.
This year, one of my commitments and a great interest is to be more engaged with you as leaders, chapter leaders, and our frontline membership. On Monday, a Twitter handle, I'm privileged to be the first one to hold at AFP Prez, P-R-E-Z. I already have 29 followers. I feel so proud. I have a long way to go to catch up to our current student board member, Kevin Bernstein, who has a little over 1,000, and our king of family medicine social media, Mike Sevilla, who has nearly 7,000 members.
Show that is passionate about medicine and social media. This is the Family Medicine Rocks podcast for a Thursday on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Mike Sevilla, the hardest working family doctor on social media. Why is that? That's right. I'm doing all of these shows leading up to next week's big advocacy meeting in Kansas City. I don't know what it is, 5 shows in 10 days, something like that. Because why? Because I'm a giver, because I love you people out there, because I will do this to help, you know, get the word out at the meeting, help hype up the meeting, help get you excited and prepared for this meeting coming up next week, because it's just going to be awesome. Why? Because I'm going to be there. I'm going to be talking about social media and getting people very excited about what I'm doing and what we should all be doing and exploring social media and talking about a little bit more. I encourage you to check out my digital library of information at familymedicinerocks.com. It has blog posts, it has audio podcasts, it has videos, all that stuff. Over there, I encourage you to check all that out. Shout out to everybody following me on Twitter, all 8,841 people following me on Twitter. Thank you so much for that. I am Dr. Mike Sevilla on Twitter, Dr. Mike Sevilla. Thank you so much for that. Also, shout out to all 374 people who are following the Facebook page, facebook.com/FamMedRocks. And we're kind of leveling out there. Hopefully we'll be getting more people who enjoy the content and liking the page. And we will be hopefully being on the road to 400 Facebook followers and hopefully on the road to 9,000 Twitter followers. That will just be enormously huge, let me tell you. Today is Thursday, April 26, 2012. It is 2 p.m. Eastern. It is 11 a.m. Pacific time. And a shout out to everybody out there at the STFM 12 meeting, the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine in Seattle, Washington. And Very excited to see them all over the Twitter today. They are on Twitter at FoundSTFM12. So follow those people out there. I'm very excited that I'm following a lot of new family docs out there who are out there at the STFM meeting, and be very curious what they talk about and what they tweet about. So thank you so much for that. Let's see here. Let's see the temperature here at Family Medicine Rocks World Headquarters. Feels like 58 degrees Fahrenheit. And how's your week been going, kids? You know, I do want to thank everybody. I want to thank everybody who has already listened to or have downloaded episode 252 from last night. It's been about 17 hours, and we have already had a lot of people listen in or download the episode. Thank you so much for that. I talked about the 5 tips on how you can be successful at medical meetings, and also had a little bit of a commentary on Warren Buffett's doctor. And go to familymedicinerocks.com and to check all of that out. Thank you so much for that. And coming up on Sunday here, Sunday. That is April 29 here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Dr. Robin Liu will be here at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time. She, of course, is the is the new physician representative on the AFP Board of Directors. And we'll be talking about how excited she is to go to next week's STFM meeting. And also next week coming up on the show is the conference chair himself, Dr. Jay Lee, the NCSC conference chair, or also affectionately known as the conference convener. And he'll be coming on the show next week as well, and we'll be chatting it up. So very excited about the next shows coming up in the next 6 days here on the show. And I see Jerry Tolbert is on the hold here for me, and so that means I can talk about him, and he can't say anything. I'm just kidding there, buddy. We'll bring him on here in a little bit, and let me take my break here. I do want to thank Blog Talk Radio for having me be a featured host here on the network. Thank you so much for that. I've been a social media hobbyist since 2005, and if you're curious, yes, I'm a real doctor. I am a family physician in full-time private practice, meaning I see patients 5 days a week in the hospital and in my office here in a beautiful northeastern Ohio. And I will take my break here. And Dr. Jerry Tolbert, NCSC newbie, will be coming up right after the break. You're listening to the Family Medicine Rocks podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Family Medicine Revolution. Just Google FM Revolution for more details. Also, big shout-out to the Family Medicine Education Consortium, FMEC.org, I believe. And also, this show is a proud member of the ProMed Network of podcasts. You can get there by going to promednetwork.com, and we'll be right back. That's right. Family Medicine's leading voice in social media in my own mind. This is the Family Medicine Rocks podcast here on the Blog Talk Radio Network on a Thursday afternoon. And on the line with us, we have NCSC newbie and my good friend, Dr. Jerry Tolbert. Jerry, welcome back to the show there, my friend.
Thanks, Mike.
So how you doing there, buddy? We haven't talked in a while. You know, you are, you know, it seems like you're doing pretty well these days.
Yeah, things are going really well. We've got our new practice up and running, and we just passed our mark for June, so we're ahead of our projections for a number of patients. We're still really funneling a lot into the practice here to make it work, but it's going well.
That's great. We'll dive into this a little bit later during the show, but tell everybody, you know, where you're at and kind of what you're practice situation in general is, and we'll dive into it a little bit later.
Okay. I am a board-certified family physician in Northern Kentucky, Burlington, to be specific. And I'm in a practice with my dad. We started that as a retainer-based practice. And we're sort of brand new for this area, and it's not something that anybody else really around here is doing. So, I graduated back in June from South Carolina from family medicine residency itself.
So how is it working, you know, with your dad or for your dad, or how's that going? I mean, you guys, you know, I mean, is it awkward? Is it tough? Is it fun? I mean, is it all the above? I mean, how is that?
It's actually all good, at least it has been so far. You know, it's working with him, not necessarily for him. We're both co-owners of the corporation, and, you know, we've got pretty similar outlook on things. There are a few, you know, minor things that we disagree on, and that makes things fun, but, you know, as far as how we treat patients and what we do, it's pretty similar, so it works pretty well.
So do you work with medical students or residents? Do they come and hang out in your office and make fun of you or anything like that?
They make fun of us just from afar. We haven't gotten to the point yet where we're seeing patients on a regular enough basis for that to be useful for them. They'd be spending a lot of time staring at me while I sit here staring at my computer working on the business side of the office. But that's something that we definitely want to do once we get up to full numbers.
That's great. That's great. So I guess in general, before we start out with things, I mean, let's talk a little bit about family medicine. And, you know, and I know you've been on the show before, but for people who don't know, I mean, you know, why do you love family medicine? Why do you love our specialty? You know, when you do get a chance to talk to, you know, medical students and undergrads and anybody in the public, you know, what is cool about family medicine, and why do you love it so much?
You know, my biggest joy in medicine is being able to do so many different things for so many different people. I'll explain it kind of like I explained it to. There was an advertising exec that was asking some questions. We're getting ready to start an ad campaign to help advertise our business. And he asked, you know, what's the one thing that you do better than anybody else as a family medicine doctor? What's the one thing family medicine doctors do better than anything else? He's like, you know, podiatrists have Pete and OB doctors have babies. And, you know, what do you do? And I said, everything. And he said, well, what if you had to pick one thing? And I said, I wouldn't. And that's the reason why I chose family medicine, because I couldn't pick one thing. And I like doing everything. And that's what really drew me to family medicine. And that's what I really emphasize when I'm talking to students and residents. It's not about, you know, being the absolute best at any one given thing. Yeah, there are some things that I'm really good at, that I enjoy doing, that I've studied up on, and that I find myself, you know, doing good at, or not necessarily better, but more in-depth advice about or care on. But I have a joy in learning all kinds of different things. I'm a collector of skills, if you will. And that's why, you know, technology is one of the things that I love, and mechanical things. And I enjoy, you know, such a broad range of different things, artistic endeavors and those kinds of things. So family medicine to me kind of encompasses all of that when you talk about, you know, the medical specialty that gives you the most breadth and allows you to have depth if you want it. You know, that's family medicine.
And I do want to give a shout out to your business here. I forget what it is. What's the name of your practice, and where can people find you out there on the internet?
The business is called Total Access Physician, TAP, and the website, you can go to totalaccessphysician.com or TAPNKY.com. Is the much shorter version. We have a Facebook page, so it's facebook.com/Total Access. Give me some help pulling that up. We're in Burlington, Kentucky, up in Northern Kentucky, in Boone County, which is sort of one of the fastest growing counties in Kentucky. It's just south of Cincinnati, just right across the river. It's / Total Access Physicians for Facebook. You know, we just opened right in sort of right off of the main drag there in Boone County. My dad's been practicing in Boone County for about 13 years and was a part of another practice. And he, because of concerns over how, you know, things were changing from a business model perspective, you know, he didn't want medicine to be about business. And I agreed with that. I think, you know, it needs to be more about that patient relationship. And so we decided to do something different. So we went into practice, opened back in January, and so we're at this point pushing to get this practice off the ground. And we've, you know, in the 3 months we've been open, we've really had some pretty, you know, good success at meeting our goals for a number of patients and being able to take care of people the way we want to.
I'm looking at your website right now, totalaccessphysicians.com, and I'm seeing this video ad, I presume for television. How weird was that? I mean, did you guys write that from scratch? Do you have like a media company that you're working with, or did you do everything homemade? Tell me a little bit about that.
That specific ad was actually done with a partnership we had with one of the local television stations, Fox 19, the WXIX, the Fox affiliate here in Cincinnati. They were reaching out to small businesses, and on their website now they've got very location-directed advertising. So if you're from Boone County and you open fox19.com, our ad pops up, and they've got the video ad as well that you can watch. That's what that one was actually designed for. It has a pretty straightforward message. We did kind of come up with a lot of that on the spot, but it wasn't, at least the specific terms that we use. Most of it comes from the sort of boilerplate and the copy that we generated ourselves when we were first starting talking about advertising. But the company that we work with is a company called Datasphere, and they put all that together and then sent somebody out here to shoot that video, and that was a single afternoon. We lucked out. We actually had a couple of patients that came in that were more than willing to let us put them on television and pick their brains, use them as a stand-in, if you will, for the footage. And that made a huge difference because it made it a lot more personal. And so we were glad that worked out. But that video was all done by a professional video editor that works at Datasphere. He was a mercenary video editor, if you will.
That's great.
So that part of the advertising was done directly through them and by them. Now we are working on some other advertising, and I've shot a couple of things. In fact, just a couple of days ago, I did a proof of concept video for our Kentucky Academy because they're working on, you know, expanding their social media presence. And I just wanted to prove to them that with my iPhone and my computer, I could put together something that rivaled kind of what that guy did for us. And not to downplay what he did, because what he did looks great, but you know, you don't need a lot of equipment and a lot of tools to do some of this stuff anymore. It's accessible to the common man, if you will.
We'll dive into that a little bit later, and also to tell people about, you know, a concept or an idea called direct medicine or direct primary care. We're going to dive into that in a little bit, but first, on the line with us, we have Dr. Jerry Tolbert from TotalAccessPhysicians.com, and been a good friend of mine for a number of years, and also geeky, and we could talk about a lot of geeky stuff for a long time. But the reason I brought you on the show here, Jerry, is that I didn't realize that this would be your first AAFP NCSE meeting. I thought you had been there before, and that was my mistake. So this would be kind of fun to kind of go through the meeting and kind of let you know what's going to be happening and things. But before that, I'd like the people to know, or I'd like you to describe a little bit, you know, about, you know, your leadership, you know, things that you've done for the AAFP, for the Academy. Tell me a little bit about, you know, your interest, you know, in making a difference and being a leader in the AAFP, and how you started, you know, doing some of that stuff. I mean, I don't really recall at this point if you guys started as a medical student or as a resident or both. So before we dive into NCSE, tell me a little bit about, you know, your days as a medical student and resident and at the resident student meeting, as far as, you know, how you got involved with leadership there, Jerry.
Sure. And, you know, we were kind of off schedule a little bit. You know, you were sort of coming out of the resident side as I was coming into the student side. So that's kind of how we met. And, you know, you and Danny Lewis were big role models for me, just watching you even from afar, seeing what you guys did. But, you know, just interactions with the other physicians. But I started as a med student, actually as a first year. I decided before I even went to medical school that I wanted to do family medicine. And so because of that, I kind of pursued all of the different avenues that were open to me as a med student. I started out as a representative to the Kentucky Academy. That turned into getting to go to the National Resident Student Conference as part of the FMIG from UK, as well as part of, you know, being a part of the Kentucky Academy. I was the student delegate for Kentucky my first year as a med student. That year, I ran for FMIG regional coordinator and got that, and I took the region. I had at that point there were four of us, and I had the region that covered Kentucky, but also ended up with the West Coast somehow. So I had Alaska and Oregon and Idaho and Hawaii. Unfortunately, they never invited me to come do a speaking engagement, but I kept parlaying for it. I really, really wanted them to fly me out to talk to them about FMIG, but. So I did that for a year, and then the following year, I ran for and got the Congress of Delegates, the student delegate, the Congress of Delegates position, and went to Chicago for the big national meeting that, you know, you talked a lot about, the Scientific Assembly and Congress of Delegates. The meeting in Chicago was phenomenal and great chance to learn about things and kind of do some advocacy, and then also the meeting in D.C. was another one that actually was my official meeting as a delegate. So you start out as an alternate and move up to the full delegate position. My last year, I ran for it and didn't get the board position. And, at the time, you know, I had, as being on, you know, I was on commission, I was on COE as being, you know, part of being a delegate and the Commission on Education. And that was actually a very important part of what I did. You know, we had a pretty good voice as students, but the problem was, you know, the Academy was still, and to an extent still does, I'm not downplaying the Academy's role or dogging the Academy at all, but it moves at the speed of smell. It's a very bureaucratic process. And so for a student and a resident who are on fire, you know, it's kind of difficult sometimes to see your ideas tabled for 6 or 7 years when you know you're not going to be a student or resident anymore. And so that was kind of what I ran into at that point. I was kind of disgruntled a little bit. So I stepped back because I knew it was just from doing so many different things, I was probably getting a little burnout. And so participated on the state level to a certain extent and really threw myself into residency, started residency in 2008. And my intern year, the program I was with, we had a very front-loaded schedule. So I did, you know, 10 months of medicine or 9 months of internal medicine, primary care for that intern year. So it was a few core call and it didn't give me a lot of time to do a lot of other things. And then my second year, I did the same time that we would have been going to the resident student conference. I was actually on a mission trip, so didn't do that year. But then came back my third year and actually went back to the national conference and didn't really run for anything. I was the state delegate for South Carolina, but I was sort of still trying to just get back into things. And, you know, that was around the time, you know, we reconnected, I think, a little bit before that, but that was around the time when we really kind of picked up social media, and I picked up doing some more social media advocacy for family medicine. And then now I'm back in Kentucky, and, you know, like you said, planning on NCFC for the first time. You know, this is my first time. You know, I've been a board-certified family physician for 5 months now, so not that long. And so I decided to give NCFC a try when Kentucky decided, you know, they put out that they wanted people for the delegate position, and they really pushed to get people in. And I thought I was getting sort of late to the game, but apparently not. And I got picked as the new student, or I'm sorry, the new physician delegate. They're actually sending somebody from Kentucky for every one of the constituencies, which I thought was really neat.
That's great.
So that's what I'm doing now. And then, you know, I'm focusing a lot on my practice, but I'm also in the time that I've got when things, you know, slow down a little, or when I'm sitting here and I've finished the business part of the day and I don't have any patients on the schedule, that's when I sit down and do things kind of like the advocacy stuff for the KAFC, the Kentucky Academy. And then that's sort of my big thing at the moment. You know, as far as passions, you asked about that. I guess, two big things. One, you know, resident student issues are still important to me. I'm not that far away from residency. I remember, you know, that there was a huge, I don't want to say there was a huge problem, but there was a huge amount of information coming down the pipeway or parkway that residents and students weren't going to have to deal with when I was a resident student, but now they do. You know, as a practicing physician, I know that in 2 years they're going to be dealing with a whole different game than when I'm coming out. And that's why I think it's important that they understand some of those things. When I was a resident, they always, you know, were talking about, oh, you're gonna have to deal with this, you're gonna have to deal with that. And honestly, I haven't, because it's worked itself out over time. And so that was good for me, I guess. But there are things that aren't going to work themselves out, you know. And something that we all constantly kind of look at is, you know, the Medicare payment issue and the SGR and being part of the RUC and being part of all these things that really are going to affect people and that are going to make things, you know, we've reached kind of a breaking point, and I think people need to honestly realize that, and it shouldn't scare them away from family medicine. And I think that's one of the things I'm passionate about. The other thing would be just in general, getting the word out as to what a family doc does. It's amazing to me how few people understand the words family medicine, what that means. Nobody that I've talked to, from an advertising perspective, for sure, we've dealt with a couple of different agencies and you know, 10 or 15 different people. And when you say family medicine, they have no clue. And that's important, because if people don't know what family medicine does, there's not going to be a way for your patients to advocate. There's not going to be a way for us as physicians to advocate when we can't put into words what we're talking about. And the Academy has done some pretty good things, but as far as reach, it's just not there, and we've got to figure out a way to do that.
Yeah, let's dive into that a little bit. On the line with me, we have Dr. Jerry Tolbert, and he's from TotalAccessPhysicians.com. And you touch on a very important topic that I do have a blog post like on draft. Talking about a specific issue as far as, you know, I think that family medicine has a major marketing problem. And I think it's both a strength and it's both a weakness that family medicine has so much diversity that it's good, but it's a detriment in that, just like I was talking to Julie Wood the other night. I mean, it's one family doc. You see one family doc. You see one family doc, and you try to come to a point where you try to define what a family medicine physician is. And it's very difficult, and it's very, and it's almost impossible, because you're almost always going to offend somebody if you leave something out. Would you agree with that, Jay?
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's why the family medicine community has been hesitant or has been avoiding this issue. You know, trying to see, because, you know, everybody knows what a cardiologist does. Everybody knows what an OBGYN doctor does. Everybody knows what a surgeon does. But when you talk about family medicine, you talk about primary care, you talk about family physicians, you know, and you try to package that into some kind of marketing campaign to, if for anything else, talk to my patients about it or talk to my community about this is what a family doc does, that is virtually impossible. I don't know if it's, you know, politically incorrect, or I don't know if it's very difficult for, you know, the Academy to get their hands around. But that's something that our specialty needs. I don't know what the best way to come up with that, but you know, there's got to be some way to try to do that, you know, with still educating people but not offending some people, because, you know, I mean, I don't do full scope family medicine, you know, and it's okay, you know, and I don't begrudge the people that do that. But how do we get everybody under the same tent to try to agree to say, hey, this is what a family doctor does. We know that people can do more. We know people can do less. But we got to have to find somebody, you know, some way to educate the nation and our community how to do that. What would you say about that, Jerry?
I would say that it's something I've been given a whole lot of thought lately, because, you know, part of this media campaign that we're getting ready to start, you know, one of the other television stations here in town has came to us and said, you know, we've got this media specialist that's coming in, the guy that I was explaining that I wouldn't choose, you know, one aspect of family, you know, that family medicine's best in. because of all of that, because you've got to find a central message. And I think that's a big part of what's difficult in family medicine is finding a central message, because we do so many things. And you don't, like you said, you don't want to leave people out. You don't want to be limiting. You don't want to say, well, you know, we do women's health and we do men's health and we do pediatrics and we do sports medicine and we do geriatrics and we do, or do you break it down by disease? We do chronic disease management like diabetes and high blood pressure, and we do thyroid disease, and we do acute diseases like head colds and acute appendicitis. Do you say it that way? How do you break it down when you talk about so many hundreds of things that we can take care of? And there's not any one point in the body that we can point at and say, hey, that's my spot. Just like you talked about cardiologists, orthopedists. They can point at one part of the body and say, that's my spot. And that's what they do. And they are very, very good at it. But we take care of everything. And how do you say, is there anything that you don't do? Well, some family physicians, yeah. But as a family physician, we're pretty much trained to do most of those things. And so what we've come up with and what we're probably going to end up pushing, and this may be the tack that the Academy has to take to save face or to be politically correct or however you want to put it, is we take care of the whole patient. We take care of, and not only we take care of the whole patient, we take care of the whole patient over the course of their lifetime. We take care of them when they're born, and we take care of them when they're dying. We take care of the baby, the teenager, the adolescent, the young adult, the adult, the middle-aged individual, the elderly, and the patient that is on their deathbed. You know, my dad has a patient that's 102 years old, and he also has a patient that right now, because of the change in practices, the younger patient I think we have right now is about 16 months old. But honestly, if we had a baby born next week, you'd have a patient that was a day old. And that's what family medicine does. And I think that's our strength, is that we can take care of people in all stages of life for, all of the major things that kind of come at them. We can at least get them on the pathway. And we can coordinate the care with the specialists who are taking care of the bones or taking care of the heart or taking care of the liver. You have to come at this not from what we don't do. And you can't come at it from what we do best. You come at it as, these are the things that we take care of. This is who we take care of. Because honestly, family medicine is more about the person anyway. It's more about a personal relationship with a set of patients. It's not about, and there's all kinds of, infighting and in jokes about, the orthopedist only takes care of bones. And if you had a stub toe, he'd tell you, well, it's not broken, so I can't do anything for you. There's all kinds of, every specialty says these things about every other specialty, which is a whole issue unto itself, that's frustrating to me. But the idea is that, for family medicine, we can't be the ones that just kind of come in the room, take care of the one thing and leave. We're the ones that hold your hand when you're in hospice and dying. We're the ones that, take care of you when you're 2 years old and have an ear infection. We're the ones that, walk with you when you're going through puberty and you have no idea what's going on. You're mad at everybody else around you. We're the ones that kind of help kind of go through those things with you. There's more to what we do than just a 5-minute commercial could ever encompass, or even a 30-second commercial. That's a nightmare. But if you had to, that's what I think.
It's very difficult. It's because, you're going to exclude somebody, and how do you address that? There's a lot of family docs that don't go to the hospital anymore. There's a lot of family docs that don't do nursing home work. There's a lot of family docs that don't do newborn work. And trying to come up with something that is, kind of a broad enough, big enough tent, but not exclude anybody, that is what the challenge is. And I don't really know how to get around it other than, trying to come up with something that is, individual to yourself, to your own practice. And there's even guys that, and gals that are not even in practice. They're in the academic setting. They're in research, but they still call themselves family physicians. And it's just, I don't know. It is a huge, overwhelming type of thing. I mean, I know that we need to get our message out, because I know even in my own town, in my own community, I still have to explain, oh, yes, Dr. Savella, I do go to the nursing home. Not all of our primary care, colleagues do. We do take care of newborns, but not of our primary care or, family docs do that. So I hear what you're saying, but it's just, I'm trying to take it from the other point of view. When it's, I understand, you know, from somebody from the academy's point of view, why it's so difficult. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of docs are dropping out of the AMA because they say the AMA, you know, the American Medical Association, doesn't really speak for them anymore. And I would think if the academy would take on something like that marketing thing, you know, it could be a membership type of deal, you know, because, you know, the AFP is a membership organization. They need members. If they offend members or they try to define themselves and they're a doctor that said that doesn't really fit for me, then they drop their membership and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't know if there's a real solution to this, but I mean, something has to be done. I don't know, you know, if, yeah, you know, I'm glad that we're talking about it. I don't know, you know, if other people are talking about it at the local, state, or national level, but it's like a huge, you know, elephant in the room as far as, you know, what is a family doc, and I think it goes back to some of those, you know, big, you know, 60,000 foot meetings in the past, and come up with themes as far as, you know, the values that family medicine treasures, or things like continuity, and, you know, and those type of things. I don't know. It's just it's just there's something missing. There's something that I think needs to be done to try to, you know, at least try to define who we are and what we do. And I think that would go a long way. I just don't know where to start. Does that make any sense, Jerry?
Oh, definitely. And you know, it's the same place that I had to start. And like you said, I'm kind of describing what I do. And, you know, you're exactly right in saying that not everybody does full scope family medicine. But they still had family medicine training. And I think that part of it is, what are you trained to do? You're trained to do everything. And, you know, and there are very few residency programs that let you out without training you to do, at least on a cursory level, be able to do whatever you set your mind to. And I think that from an internal standpoint is important. But honestly, externally, you've got to have a unified front, and you've got to have a way to say externally, this is what we look like from the outside. On the inside, we do all kinds of things. I mean, it's kind of like cardiology. You know, if you really drill down, they've got interventional cardiology, you know, electrophysiology and interventionalists, and, you know, people that just do outpatient cardiology. And then you've got people that have a specific, you know, love of doing echocardiography or looking at, you know, different aspects of cardiology. Internally, they talk about that. When you look at them externally, what do they do? They're heart doctors. That's what they do. And that's not to downplay what they do, because it's very important. You know, everybody knows that you got to have your heart, or it's not, you know, you can't live without one, at least at this point. And so, you know, there's something to be said for having that unified external picture, even if internally you define yourself in multiple different ways. And I think that's actually important. I think it's good. It brings a lot to the table when you start talking about family medicine. But when you talk about, you know, what does your family doctor do, you know, and I think maybe that's the subtle difference. Are you doing family medicine, or are you a family doctor? And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to be a family doctor, to take care of family. But, you know, if you, let's say you're a family medicine trained physician and you only take care of women's health issues, then you're probably better labeled as a women's health doctor. You have training in family medicine, but you take care of women's health, and that's what you do, and that's how you define yourself, and that's important. But when it comes to defining, what we as a specialty do, we really have to say, you know what, that aspect of what we do is based on what we're trained to do and what the specialty itself was originally created to do, which is important. Now, don't get me wrong, evolution is important as far as going through time and making us more relevant and making us, you know, and it's good that people can specialize and do different things. People that specialize in geriatrics or sports medicine, we got to have them, because if we didn't, then who was going to take care of those things? But as a whole group, what's the one common factor that everybody has? And that's, you know, that goes back to that idea of family medicine and that idea of family doctor taking care of the whole family. And I may take care of one aspect of the whole family, but I'm still a family doctor.
On the line with us, we have Dr. Jerry Tolbert from TotalAccessPhysicians.com in Burlington, Kentucky. And let's kind of shift gears here a little bit. And I did want to talk a little bit about NCSC specifically. I went away from that, but let's kind of come back to that. I mean, I don't have to tell you that much. I just kind of have to tell you what the structure of the meeting is, because, I mean, you pretty much are familiar with what happens there from a conceptual standpoint. And, you know, when you get there, I mean, for me, thinking back to my first NCSC meeting, it was different from the aspect that, you know, there are people there. There are specific delegates there from other constituency groups, other interest groups that may or may not have the same life experience or interests, you know, that you do. And it is so fascinating talking to, because we're all family docs, but it's interesting talking to people who are passionate about a lot of different things, you know, whether it's women's issues or minority issues or GLBT issues or, you know, IMG issues, international medical graduates. And you know, when you go there and you go to, you know, the first day, you know, which will be the first official day will be Thursday. And I believe there's a huge plenary session there. Even before that in the morning, there is a official orientation session, especially for people who have not went to this type of format of meeting in the past. And it's really interesting for me to go because, you know, all the people that go, you know, obviously they want to go. They are very talented. They're very passionate, but they're not really really familiar with the structure of the meeting. And, you know, when they learn about the structure of the meeting, they get very excited about it. There's the ability to, you know, the AAFP, the Academy, you know, gives members the ability and the opportunity to change policy of the Academy through things called resolutions. And that is what the majority of what's going to be happening on Thursday and Friday, to write resolutions, to try to influence Academy policy, and they're debated. And of course, I know you know that, Jerry, but it's just to let other people know kind of what the process is and the synergy that takes place with all these different groups and all these different people from all these different parts of the country. It is just fascinating to see, and it's even better to see, you know, as a first-time attendee to go and try to work your way through that and try to how to get things done, because they're different than the resident and student meeting. You know, there are people who go to NCSC meetings that have went there for 10 years or 15 years, and there's a lot more experience there. There's a lot more knowledge there, and you know what you're going to see and what you're going to experience, what you're going to feel, you know, is that, you know, you're going to get friends there that you meet here at the first meeting that you'll have for a long time and you'll have forever, and it'll be interesting for me to kind of, you know, see you go through that. And I know that, you know, you're going to be asking me all kinds of questions, which is awesome. And I'll be happy to help you, you know, as far as any of that goes. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of the whole thing. I mean, I know that we've talked about it before, but, you know, do you have any kind of, you know, preconceived notions or have people talked to you about this meeting before? I mean, you know, do you have any kind of expectations going into this meeting there, Jerry?
My biggest expectation is something you already touched on, and that's just seeing all of those different, you know, there are different people that have different buy-ins at different levels, and I want to see that because, you know, being in Kentucky in the middle of you know, the sort of, suburban area, we're fairly homogenous. I mean, we have, some spread as far as the constituency that we deal with, but I want to see what the doctors in other places are dealing with, and I want to hear what issues are, that they're passionate about, because honestly, if the Academy is going to put its money all in one basket to do something and do it well, you know, it needs to be something that affects everybody, or at least the majority of people, not just a bunch of little things that affect, you know, a handful of people, because, you know, if there's anything that you know, this whole marketing thing has been showing me is that your biggest bang for your buck comes when you concentrate your efforts on one thing. And that's where you get results. That's where you get outcomes. That's, you know, the little things are good and the little things are important. And if you've got extra along the way, or if you've got people willing to do that and just step up and do it, you know, kind of like this KAFB thing. If you've got somebody that's got an extra hour of time a week and wants to step up and do a video that can be shown to all the members, then great. You've got a resource. And I want to see that. I want to see what people are doing to be that resource. Because I think that's another thing that is going to come out of this, is that I'm going to be able to see, you know, oh, this person is really pushing to get this, you know, this agenda through, and they've got really good ideas about it, but they don't necessarily have somebody to execute. And you know, that part of, you know, well, the Academy probably doesn't necessarily need to put all of its force there, because it's not going to affect, you know, all the constituents like you're talking about. The Academy has to make sure that they're as broad as possible so that they don't lose in one large group or small group or whatever. And so that's what I want to see. I want to see, and I think I'm going to see what people are doing and how they're pushing to get, you know, their passionate, the things that they're passionate about, how they're pushing to get those across.
And of course, like other leadership meetings, other policy meetings, there's the ability to run for something. And I know you're probably going to be running for something, and I don't want to steal the thunder away or anything like that. but I know that people usually get caught up in the fever. People usually get caught up in the excitement and throw the name in and think about running for stuff, and that's going to be exciting. If for anything else, to be on a reference committee or to help out, in some way, maybe not run for something, but be a part of the meeting in some fashion. I know people who first go, they're very excited about it, and they dive into it. I know you'll be diving into it as well. Anything else about NCSC? I mean, I know that, I've been hyping up your NCSC orientation, but it was probably, like 3 minutes. There's not much more.
It's interesting to hear, because I've been listening to, the last few podcasts about, the people that have been there, that have done that, that have been conveners and that have been, in charge of things. And the things that you guys are excited about are the things that I was expecting to be a part of this. So that's good. It definitely, definitely puts me on track for what to expect. I guess my biggest questions would be, is it run very similar to the resident student meeting, or is there more to it from that standpoint when it comes to not only the business side of things, but also like the reference committees and those kinds of things? Is that all still pretty similar?
It is. And, I don't want to take credit, but I will take a little bit of credit. When I started at NCSC, I mean, the format was not very similar to what was happening at the student meeting or at the Congress of Delegates. And when I was in leadership and when I was, doing the convener thing, something I really tried to push was to make it a format that is familiar to people, especially people coming up from the resident students or people that are going to be going to the big meeting, the Congress of Delegates meeting. And I think they still do this, is that, the reference committees and the way things are debated and the way resolutions are taken and recorded, I think they're by topic, whether it's education or, that type of thing. And it was a little bit different than when I started the NCSC. So I think the format you're going to see is something that you're very familiar with coming from the resident student side, and that'll make you fit in a little bit better as far as, this is organization and finance, or this is education, or this is, whatever. So the format's going to be very, very similar. It's just going to be more of a richness as far as, these specific constituency groups and what is, very important to them, what they're very passionate about, which, I think is interesting too, but it's always interesting seeing people who are very passionate about an issue that I may not be as passionate about, or something that I'm indifferent about, or something that I may not even know about from before because of my practice setting. I'm not, I'm not in their state or I'm not in their type of situation. But format-wise, it is very, very similar. The elections are going to be a little bit different for you because it's going to be a little bit different format than was at the resident student side as far as, when the speeches are, when the elections take place, and, how runoffs are done, and what order that they're given in, or, that type of thing. So that's one of the differences that you'll see. But, overall, you're going to be, very familiar about how business gets done at this NCSC meeting. And, and part of the transformation over the past few years has been, to make it comfortable for people coming from the resident student side and for people eventually who are going to be, graduates of this meeting going to the Congress of Delegates, to make them familiar, with the big show when they get there eventually.
Okay. I mean, and that's what I was hoping for. I mean, and I've been to the big show, as you say. I was still kind of naive to what the issues, were going to end up being, because there's so many things that there was a resident and student that you just don't have the frame of reference for. It's important, and you can tell that it's important, and you can tell people are passionate about it, but you haven't experienced it. And that's exactly like what you talk about with other people, things that other people are passionate about. That's what I want to see, because if something that I care about is not important to 90% of the 90% of the constituency, then honestly, it probably isn't the best place for the academy to put their focus. Whereas if if I'm in that 10%, and it's 90% of people are interested in it, and I'm ambivalent, then there's still probably a reason for me to support it, at least be knowledgeable about it. So when people ask questions, or when they need people to give sound bites, or when you want to put out there what's going on, then I can be informed about it. You know, it's kind of like being an informed voter, those kinds of things.
All right. On the line with us, we have Dr. Jerry Tolbert from from TotalAccessPhysicians.com. TotalAccessPhysicians.com. And in the few minutes that we have left here, I did want to touch on, you know, your specific practice. You know, I sent you an article this week in the USA Today. Mm-hmm. This is from there's not that specific date. It's from this week. The title is "Some Physicians Offer Service Based on Monthly Retainers," and I think that's similar to what you guys do. And there's a lot of names for this out there. And retainer practice, concierge practice, direct primary care, direct medicine. When you talk to people, when you talk to the community, you know, how do you describe the style or the type of service or the medicine that you do at Total Access Physicians?
We call it a retainer practice because that word carries the least political kind of connotations. You know, when you say concierge, everybody's thinking $10,000 a month and you're going to get a CT scanner brought to your house. They're thinking, with the Royal Pain, the show on USA, the concierge doctor in the Hamptons, you know, they're thinking about things that are way outside the scope of what we do. But essentially, we're set up as a monthly retainer. You can pay it yearly, you can pay it quarterly. Essentially, the fee is $75 a month for an individual, $120 for a couple, $150 for a family, and that's a family of three or a family of 30, as long as they're mom, dad, children, or mom, dad, mother-in-law, or whatever, you know, people that live in the same house, essentially, kind of how we loosely define it. That's it. That's the fee. We don't bill insurance, so there's no claims that are being processed. Most insurances won't actually pay for the fee that we're charging. So most people have to pay for that themselves. A lot of people like to pay for that out of a health savings account or a flexible spending account. And then they carry a high deductible insurance plan to cover if they have to go to the hospital or if they see specialists, which are not things that we do. We do broad spectrum family medicine. We don't necessarily do total spectrum because of the malpractice law in Kentucky and the lack of reform and the way that affects malpractice insurance. We don't deliver babies. Very few family physicians, unless they're in an academic setting, do for that reason. And it's very sad for me because I really enjoyed that part of residency, but it's something that I just can't do here. I wish I could. We can do some prenatal care, but it's fairly limited. We do all of the other things that you think about, like we talked about. We do chronic disease management. We do some sports medicine. We do women's health. We do everything, just like you would think of as a broad-spectrum family medicine office. And it's all covered under that $75 a month fee. If you come 5 times a month, if you come 0 times a month, if you come 500 times a month, that's part of it. You have access to our email. We have a private email set up specifically just for patients. We have a private cell phone number that is just for patients. And we give that out when you become a patient, and it's yours to use. And if you need it to talk to the doctor, if you have a question about something specific, you call the doctor. You don't call the office and talk to the receptionist and then maybe talk to the triage nurse and then maybe talk to Dr. Colbert's nurse. And then if you're lucky, Dr. Colbert may be around somewhere or you may get to leave a message and they'll call you back. You call me. And that's part of the problem that we kind of saw with traditional practice. That you're just wasn't time to do that. And the way that we talked about it was, you know, if everybody decided to come twice a month, what's the number of patients that we could see and still be able to provide the kind of services we want to do? If you need an hour visit, we see you for an hour. If you need a practice, you need a visit for an acute problem on a Monday, we see you on a Monday. And how do we do that? And so when we're explaining it to patients, we say, you know, that's why we limit ourselves to about 900 patients each. Now, for people that may not know, average family physician has about 2,200. That's the most recent numbers I found. The 2,200 patients on their patient panel, whether they all come to that see them or not during the year. For us, we're limiting that to 900. So it is a fewer number of patients, but what they're getting for that, you know, that decrease in numbers, they make up for in sort of quantity of care. Instead of being, you know, 10-minute visits, which is sort of becoming a standard, we can give hour-long or 45-minute visits if we want to. So that's sort of what we pitch this as. What you're paying for is the ability to you're paying for your time because your time is expensive and your time is important. And if it's worth, you know, if it's that concerning to you, then $75 a month probably isn't as big a deal as if you were, I mean, if you didn't care, you know, if a 10-minute visit was good for you, then that's great. And then that's probably going to be economically better for you. And we encourage that. We don't, you know, we don't want people we don't want them to pay a ton of money to come see us. If they're not going to come see us, you know, if they only go to the doctor once a year, we're probably going to cost them a whole lot of money. And that's silly. Healthcare shouldn't be super expensive. You know, there should be a market value, which is next impossible to figure out. But you know, what we said was, is, you know, what's the average spending that we would expect on a single patient? And it was around $1,000. And the psychological advantage to going below $1,000, say $900, which is what $75 a month works out to be, going to $900, there's a huge psychological advantage as far as I'm not paying $1,000, I'm only paying $900, even though the distance is pretty small. And so that's kind of what we do. Anything that we have here at the office, whether that's your yearly physical with your labs and all that stuff, all of those things are covered. We have a contract with Quest Lab, not to drop names, I guess. We have a contract with A-Lab, and that lab gives us cost for our labs and for the patients either that don't have insurance or that would prefer to. We do straight, just a pass-through. The lab is billed to us, and we bill directly with the lab costs. So if it's $4 for a blood count, then it's $4 for a blood count for the patient. And then, you know, eventually, if we get successful and have, you know, the 900 patients each, then, you know, that covers overhead. That gives us a little bit extra on the back end. And eventually we'd like to put in things like a digital x-ray machine so we can do on-site x-rays and put in, you know, some of the other things that, you know, or invest in some of the other things to make patient care more complete just here in the office. So that the things that we can do or that we're able to do, we can do.
And you guys go and you go to the hospital too. Do you cover patients at the hospital or a nursing home and that type of thing too? Or
yes, that fee covers if you go into the hospital. The physician fee, for people that don't really understand how that works, which up until I was a high level resident, I didn't really know how it worked either. But essentially the hospital charges X amount, and then the physician bills for seeing the patient in the hospital. And so it's, you know, I think Medicare reimbursement, I think the cheapest is something like $60 or $70 a day for being in the hospital, being seen in the hospital for a basic problem. That fee is rolled into our $75 a month as well. We don't charge extra for hospital visits. If you need home calls, house calls, we do those. If there's a situation that requires it, we're coming to the house, we'll see you. If you need to come in on a Saturday and get stitched up because you cut your finger while you're making dinner, we'll meet you at the office on Saturday at 7 o'clock and stitch it up. So we're trying to make this as open as possible. And the great thing about, you know, the 50 or so patients that we've got right now is that they're not, you know, everybody's like, oh, people, how are you going to keep people from abusing that system? How do you keep people from taking advantage of you? And the short answer is, we're trying it out and we'll see how it works. You know, most people, when you really look at it, if you develop a relationship with them, they understand that you're a person. You're not just a number to them, just like, you know, you're not just somebody that they see for 5 or 10 minutes once a year, or twice a year or whatever. You're not just somebody that they go to when they feel like they need medicine for something. You're a person. And a lot of them, you know, most of them, all of them, honestly, respect that. And so they're not going to abuse the privilege, you know, kind of that we're giving them. So that's the thing that we're banking on. Now, that may happen, and that's something that we'll deal with when we cross, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But yeah.
So are you like on call like all the time? I mean, what happens when you leave town? I mean, is that going to be difficult for the people, you know, the people that are covering you, or people that are difficult for your patients that you know that you will not be in town for a few days? How do you approach that?
So this is actually one of the beauties of being able to have sort of this total access, this direct medicine idea, is that I have a database of all my patients, and when I go out of town, let's say for the MTSA meeting, I send them a note this week. It goes out, and it says, you know what, from Wednesday through Saturday of next week, I'm going to be out of town. If you have something that is chronic that needs to be addressed, come to see me before, or we can set up an appointment when I get back. And we'll take care of those things. If there's something acute that comes up that you have questions about, call the number on your card, send me an email. I will respond to all those things. I have patients that send me text messages. You know, we don't do a whole lot of heavy medical communication via text message because of the HIPAA regulations. But there are certain things that you can do, or I can point them to, hey, send me this detail in the secure email that we've got set up, and we'll do it that way. Or, you know, if it's a quick text message, then, you know, we deal with it and move on. And so my note to my patient says, if it's something that you just have questions about, contact me. I have my cell phone in my pocket, and it has my email on it, it has my text messaging on it, it has my phone, of course, which is one of the least used parts of it. It has my calendar. So if there's a question about a date or an appointment, or if you need to make an appointment, it has my Twitter and my Facebook. So, you know, if people send, which they don't, but if patients wanted to send me questions that way, they can. And it's not they don't because they can't, it's they don't because not a lot of my patients, you know, several of my elderly patients don't even know what a Facebook is. And you know, a lot of the younger patients that are on Facebook, it's not something that they use. They know that they can get me a lot faster if they send an email or if they call. So, and then if it's an emergency, jumping back to the real question, if it's an emergency and you need to be seen, then my dad is my cross coverage. We're the only two in the practice. We're the only two that cover for each other. And we are on call all the time. We answer our own phone calls and do those things. When you call the office, we don't have a receptionist right now because, honestly, we couldn't find one that would work for free. And so it's not because we don't want to pay her. It's because we can't pay her because we got to keep the lights on and keep the doors open. And so, we, you know, we're not getting a salary from this business right now. We're not at the point for the number of patients we have that we're making any money. We're putting money into this in order to do it. And so that, and a lot of the patients that we're dealing with right now understand that. And so they don't abuse the privilege by calling us at 2 o'clock in the morning to tell us that they have a hangnail. And so when I go out of town, your dad will cover for my patients if there's an emergency and they need to be seen, or if they go to the hospital or whatever. And I cover for his when he goes out of town as well. He's actually active military. He's a lieutenant colonel in the Army. And he has, you know, responsibilities for that he has to deal with. And that's something that we kind of cover for each other when the things come up.
That's fascinating. I just I have all kinds of more questions for you, but I will hold them until I see you in person. the last topic I want to talk about is specifically about social media. I saw your pilot or trial video for like a news update for the Kentucky chapter. What are your goals with that, or what are you trying to show the Academy as far as, you know, how to utilize social media, if for anything else, as a news update every so often?
It actually came out of a conversation I had with our chapter executive, who I have known since I was a med student, who I have respected and looked up to for a long time as a business person. And that's probably the wrong way to put it, as a leader for the Kentucky Academy, let's put it that way. And he's been sort of a mentor to me for a lot of things as far as the Academy goes. I sort of trade. And he's kind of techie as well. He's getting more techie as he goes because he knows he has to. But we sort of trade secrets on things. And when I was a student, he really encouraged me to step up and be, you know, be not necessarily a voice for the students, but just to be verbal and to actually express things rather than hiding behind, you know, hiding behind my pencil while I took notes on all the things that the doctors that were actually in practice were saying. And a lot of good came out of that. You know, the med students from the FMID that were on that, you know, restructuring committee when I was a med student ended up rewriting. We wrote the vision statement for the Kentucky Academy. We were the ones that came up with the wording. We were the ones that came up with the ideas. And they really respected us and our opinion, and it was great. And so he came to me and said, you know, what, we're getting into social media. What kind of ideas do you have to jumpstart social media? And they've had, you know, they've got a Twitter feed, and they've got a Facebook page, and they've got a website that's been redesigned, and their website is beautiful. In fact, that clip that I show in my promo is actually from their website directly. But they've got all of this stuff set up, and it's a beautiful arrival in the 21st century, or, you know, in some cases the 20th century, I guess, for them. And they're really working hard as the chapter, you know, leaders to bring things up to that level. Because they understand that it's going to be important for bringing, you know, the younger generation of med students into family medicine. And so out of that, he said, you know, what kind of ideas do you have? And I said, you know, what you have to do, and this is something that I have been very passionate about, and you probably have heard me say this even before, we are a generation that does not have time to wait for things. And it's a negative thing most of the time, but it can be exploited to really get your message across, because it actually makes you distill down, kind of like what we're talking about with family medicine in general, distill down your message to the most important point. And if people want to learn more, give them a venue for learning more. But when you're just giving them the basics, give them the stuff that's most important. And so what I told him was, you know, if you want to do this, take a 2-minute clip that would go out to everybody. Give them a quick video snippet that says, this is what's going on in the state. These are the legislative issues. These are the issues, from the KAFP perspective, what's going on in the academy that's important to everybody. What's going on in medicine that's important to everybody? Is there a new study that's going to change the way we practice? Is there a legal mandate coming from on high that's going to be important? Is there Kentucky state law that just passed? Which there was. There's a big one. I didn't talk about it in that. That was a proof of concept. In fact, interestingly enough, I'm glad that he put it out there. But when I sent it to him, I didn't expect anybody else to ever see it. And so that's why I'm reading my – I've got a teleprompter on my iPad that I was using so that I could not stutter over my words. And it's sitting right behind my iPhone, which I used to film that clip. And so it's not as polished as I would necessarily have liked it. But it was fun to do, and it was an idea for them to say, hey, this is what you can do with very little equipment. And, essentially it took me about an hour and a half to 2 hours to get it done, but that was because I had to relearn how to use iMovie because I hadn't done it in so long. So
that's just fascinating. I mean, it's just, I didn't realize you did the whole thing, with an iPhone and an iPad. That is just incredible. I mean, it looks like it was done with, high grade, stuff, like Final Cut Pro or whatever. And what you put together there was looked pretty professional, looked pretty well done. And I agree, the hardest part was, I haven't probably used most of that functionality of iMovie. And that's what I'm probably going to be picking the brain about as far as trying to use some of that stuff, because it was very well done. And I know that it was done with, probably not a lot of time and not a lot of prep. But just think of, when you do have the time, to think things through and to really map things out as far as what you want to do in that 90 seconds or 2 minutes, just going to be incredible.
Yeah, and that was actually my point. That was actually exactly what I was trying to get across to them was, if you want to do this, I don't mind doing it, and I enjoy doing it, and I have fun doing it. So if you want me to take on some of that responsibility, great, I'll do it. But I need to know that it's something that you're going to use, not something I'm just going to throw out there for myself. Because, again, it's the same idea of return on investment. If I'm going to put the time in to do it, I want somebody else to get something out of it. And if it's for the academy, great, because, the academy, what benefits the academy benefits me as a member. But the whole idea of putting that together and getting it ready, you're right. I mean, it took 15 minutes to write the script. It took about 3.5 minutes to get the recording that I liked, because I did it 3 times. And then it took about, I'd say, every bit of an hour to do the cut and to relearn iMovie, and rendering took about 12 minutes. So, it's one of those things that has a lot of potential without a whole lot of upfront investment. I mean, I carry my phone around with me everywhere I go, the new 4S, the camera on the back of it, it's phenomenal for this kind of stuff, especially if it's just on YouTube. If you're going to put it on television for somebody to watch, yeah, it's probably not going to be the best as far as quality. But I can shoot, 720 or 1080p video with that camera, and for YouTube, it looks like it's, crystal clear, versus shooting, with a video camera that costs thousands and thousands of dollars to get the same effect just because it's on YouTube.
Right. Great. One last question for you, and I'll let you go. So NCSC and social media and you really want to try to, explode this and blow this up and get people to know about it. Do you have any advice for me as far as, how we can really, on site there, really try to get people excited and people using their mobile devices to use Twitter and Facebook to try to, really spread the word and to get some buzz and to get people to pay attention to our meeting?
I think they're actually a 3-pronged kind of thing that I would do, and this is something I wanted to talk to you offline about anyway. One thing is if we do the video, because like I said, my iPhone's in my pocket everywhere I go. If we do video interviews and put those out in a venue where people, and we got to publicize this, so we're going to have to be like carrying around damage boards or something that we can wear, and put it out there and say, you know what, this is what's going on for the day's event. This is what, you know, summarize what happened today, and talk to people that hit these main points of the big things that happened. And then put that out there for people and say, this is where you can find it. If, you know, if you didn't see this session, you know, you need to get the materials for the session. If you were part of this, this is what came out of it. Or if you couldn't be there for this part, this is what came out of it. And have it ready right on time. Do it right that day. Put it together, cut it, and have it up and available for people to see at the end of the day. That in and of itself, because people just think, oh, that's an amazing accomplishment. And honestly, you know, if you've got the inclination to these things, it's not as hard as it sounds. That I think will really make a big impact. But use that as your jumping off point and say, you know what, and you've got this at the beginning of the meeting, you've got this Wednesday session that I'm really looking forward to on social media, that, you know, in that talk about, you know, if you've got a Twitter account, we're going to be collating all of this information, and we want people to get this information out there and to talk about the issues that are going on, and that you've got a forum where people necessarily can communicate, but they don't miss, you don't get interrupted. You're not going to get, you know, shouted down, or you're not going to get into heated arguments. You're going to get a way to express your point, but you have to be succinct about it. Because if you're going to use Twitter, you can't go over 140 characters. I mean, you can, but people stop reading. So yeah, it's one of those things where you have a perfect venue for expressing those opinions. This, you know, and we've got, you know, you set up a hashtag that we use specifically for recording these things. And then at the end of the day, we put together the highlight. You know, these are what people were saying about, you know, a 30-second blurb about this is what people were saying about X issue, or this is what people were saying about this session, or about, you know, the day to day. And
that's,
you have
great.
To encourage them to say,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, yeah, keep going.
I was just going to say, you just have to give them something back. Because if you're going to ask them to do something, there has to be a return on that investment, just like everything else. And so if you say at the end of the day, everybody's going to be able to see this, and it's going to be something, it's an unofficial production, but everybody gets to see what happened today. And everybody says, you know, everybody gets to see this session, this is what people are saying about it, or this this person, this group of people, they have, you know, this constituency. Let's say that you, whichever constituency, pick one, women. Let's say that they have a great discussion about an aspect of family medicine that covers everybody, but it was just restricted to them because they were the ones that were kind of passionate about it. Then everybody gets to participate in that conversation. Everybody gets to be a part of that. And then what you do is you find the people who are willing to lead that discussion and facilitate that discussion that were part of that discussion, and then hook everybody else up with that person. So it takes a little footwork on the back end, or on the front end, but on the back end, you get a ton of response out of it. And you can measure the response. You can see how many people are looking at these things and reading these things and telling them, talking about these things. And people that don't get to go to the meeting for whatever reason, whether because they're working or because, you know, they weren't chosen to go, or because they're outside of the scope of the position, they get to see what we're doing. And they can participate in those discussions as well, even remotely. And I think that's another big thing that you could even talk about doing. That was the third prong, is bringing in people that aren't there, aren't able to be there, putting their opinions out in front of everybody. So when we have, you know, issues that are out there, saying, okay, this is the issue that we're talking about now, go. And let's say you get response from even just two people that are out in the community that are family docs that are in the trenches dealing with this stuff, and they have an opinion. That needs to be heard just as much as ours does when we're there in person. And so being that voice for the people at large is another way that the Twitter, I think, and Facebook and those kinds of things can give everybody a voice.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm excited just thinking about it. You know, I'm bringing my professional grade camera out there, you know, and I have a microphone and things, and I like this idea. Maybe you and I can do like a stand up interview or something like that. You know, maybe at the beginning of the day and or at the end of the day, kind of giving a summary. We'll put that out there on Twitter. Anybody at the meeting can come and talk to us. You know, tell us what you think the best session of the day was from your point of view, or what did you learn. So not only is it talking about the session, but there's a teaching point there as well, and saying, hey, what are the one or two or three points that you learned from this session? And we want to put it out there you know, let people know about it. And yeah, I think it's great to be putting out there on Twitter and for people at the meeting. You know, hey, come talk to us. You know, come talk to me or Jerry or something like that, and we'll find, you know, give us, you know, 3 to 5 minutes of your time We'll record it. We'll put it up on the website somewhere, put it on my website or whatever, and to help get the word out. Maybe we can even go nuts and do like a Google Hangout or something like that, or some kind of Ustream session or some kind of live video type of thing if the bandwidth will hold up. You know, all kinds of social media possibilities. I'm really excited about it now.
I agree. And I think, you know, you've got, this is one of those random things where it's sort of that perfect storm is we've got the skills between, you know, between us and a couple other people that I have a feeling are going to be there. We've got the skills to put this together and we've got the time to do it. And we have the passion to actually make it work. And I think that's really all you need most of the time. It's kind of like blogging. You just got to be willing to just do it.
Great. Yeah. Keep throwing me ideas there. And, you know, I'll probably tap you to be like my cameraman on Wednesday afternoon, so we can record my session or other people's sessions if they want to, and have that part of the package and putting things together. But this is good. I think, and I really feel excited about this meeting from the social media aspect. You know, I'm starting to see people out there that are using Twitter, that are using Facebook. You know, just the 6 degrees of separation type of thing. I mean, they know some people who know some people who know some people. And just like you said, Jerry, I mean, just the perfect storm I think is going to happen next week where we will, I hope and I believe that we will make a big splash, not only in the family medicine community, but I think, you know, in the medicine social media community in general. And we can show everybody out there, you know, what family medicine can do, you know, with social media, to, you know, to be advocates for our patients, to be advocates for our specialty, to be advocates for our communities. It's like 6 days away, and I'm already excited about it. I have to write all this stuff down, or I have to call you later and see how we can work this out.
Yeah, no, I agree, and just like you said, I just get more excited as the days go by, just thinking about the opportunities, and when you asked me to come on the show, I was excited because I really wanted to discuss this with you and to pitch this to you, because honestly, you know, you've got a huge following, and you've got a lot of people that have huge followings that follow you, and so it's a good way to expand things exponentially, and if we, you know, if we work together to kind of do this, it could do something that I tried to do 10 years ago. You know, not quite 10, more like 8, but 8 years ago, you know, I was pushing the Academy to say, you know what, we need a media campaign that at least tells what we're doing at the meeting, because there were students back at UK that had no idea what I was doing. And I was like, you know what, I can't record everything myself, but the Academy might have access to something that we could do that. And it needs to be something that's, you know, bite-sized. It doesn't have to be, you know, like a 2-hour special event that we record on DVD. In fact, nobody would watch that. I'm excited. I look forward to it. I
want to
see what happens.
Yeah, in fact, you know, I'm putting a call out right now, you know, and I'm going to put this on my website and YouTube or whatever. You know, if there are, you know, family docs, or if there are people going to be attending this NCSC meeting next week and they want to be part, you know, of my production team, you know, my social media team out there, you know, we're going to be, you know, trying to fly under the radar, and which we'll be really bad at because we want to get our word out. But we're going to try to not be too conspicuous to people, but we want to try to, you know, show everybody out there, you know, what, you know, what a lot of passion can do with, you know, you don't need a huge budget for. You just need, you know, people who, you know, are kind of techie, or if they're not techie, very passionate. And if for anything else, you know, to work, and I'm going to say this during my talk next week, you know, I really think that, you know, media training for family physicians should be a requirement, got to be done somehow. The best people to do it are family physicians, and, you know, this is a great training ground to do that. And another thing that I'm going to say is that, you know, I think this is what, you know, just like you said, you've been waiting for this for a long time. I've been waiting for this for a long time because, you know, Jerry, you know, when we go to these meetings, and it's been 10 years ago or 5 years ago, you know, we're really excited at the meeting, but when you come home, when you get on the plane, you get closer to home, you start to lose that excitement, you start to get trapped in the reality of what your job is, and there was never really a way to reconnect to people again, to rekindle that excitement, to rekindle those contacts, and social media does that immediately through Twitter and Facebook and things, and I think, you know, that we're really going to continue getting this momentum building even after the meeting, and build on this meeting, and something that I think that we have been looking for a long time to continue with advocacy for family medicine. How does that sound?
I think it sounds great. I agree. This is a great opportunity.
I think this is our first unofficial production meeting that we're putting on the internet.
As long as we can recruit some other people, so we're not doing all the work.
That's right. Well, you know, I'm going to be begging. I mean, I'm going to be contacting people out there to help us, because as you know, Jerry, I mean, these meetings, I mean, people have to be at, you know, five different places at once. But if we can try to, if I can try to think of how to make this a little bit more streamlined for people and try to get to people and, you know, I'm not asking for 30 minutes, you know, I'm asking for, you know, 2 or 5 minutes or whatever you can spare, to whatever talent that you think is best for you, you know, whether it's writing something, whether it's talking on camera, whether it's coordinating with other people, trying to find a central location or, you know, any of that, you know, type of, you know, behind the scenes type of stuff, would I be really appreciated for?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, even if it's just something, like I said, like taking pictures, or, you know, if you've got your cell phone camera and you take pictures of different events that are happening and, you know, just pepper that stuff in as we're talking about things, I think that'd be great too.
Great. Okay, cool. And anything else on NCSC? I mean, I know we could talk for another 4 hours, but I mean, you know, my listeners out there are probably saying, hey, you know, you guys should really calm down.
that's the thing. When you get passionate people together, things happen. So, and I think that should be the theme for NCSC. I think you get passionate people together and things happen. And that's what I'm looking forward to. I want to see what comes out of it. I want to see, as far as family medicine goes, how far people really go to be advocates and to say, you know what, we need to take care of our patients first. We need to take care of our constituents and the people that depend on us for their care. And then second, we need to take care of ourselves, and we need to make sure that we're not selling ourselves short and that we're not giving up all of our rights in order to appease somebody for money. And I think that this is a great place for that to happen, because there are a lot of people that are passionate about people, and there are a lot of people that are passionate about family medicine.
All right, I'll leave it there. So this is Dr. Jerry Tolbert, TotalAccessPhysicians.com, TotalAccessPhysicians.com. Also check him out on Facebook, Facebook.com/TotalAccessPhysicians. He's on Twitter, Dr. Tolbert, Dr. Tolbert. Anything else you want to plug, man, before the end of the show?
Not right now. I've got so many different things I'm working on right now. We'll see what happens.
All right, buddy. When do you get into Kansas City there, man?
Wednesday morning.
Oh, great. Great. Well, then we'll talk off the air, and maybe we can even, because I'll be getting in, well, I won't tell people, well, I'll get in Tuesday night, but it's late. So maybe we can even do some pre-meeting stuff, and we'll have a pre-meeting meetings, you know, at the establishment of stuff, you know what I mean.
Oh yeah. All of our what do we used to call that, the mentoring meetings.
That's right. Yes, yeah, so we're going to have the pre-mentoring meeting for people who don't know, for the three people or two people that are still listening. Thank you so much for that. So we're going to go back to the Mike Sevilla mentoring meetings, which would take place at various establishments with adult beverages. I got a lot of people at my mentoring meetings, let me tell you there, Jerry. And, I'm not shy to say that, you know, I help mentor, you know, some of the best people in the academy and some of the worst people in the academy. So I won't tell them who they are, because I will get in trouble. But yes, we will bring back, maybe that'll be a hashtag on Twitter, Mike's mentorship meeting or something like that. And people don't know what that's about. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
All right, buddy. Yeah, we'll talk offline here. We'll maybe even talk after the show here. But thank you so much for coming on. And we're gonna be blowing up this meeting next week. It's gonna kick off on Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday and Saturday, we're just going to get people sick of hearing from us, because we're so excited about things. Any closing thoughts for us this afternoon, there, Dr. Tolbert?
I think we've covered it.
All right, man. So I will see you next week. Thank you so much for calling in, and we will there are going to be people going to be seeing a lot of you on my website next week as we're going around and doing crazy things. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll talk very soon.
Sounds great. Talk to you soon.
All right, Ken. So thank you so much, Jerry. And I think that's it here. We have just a few minutes left here. So just letting people know, the future show is coming up on a Sunday. I think that's April 29, 2012. That will be Dr. Robin Liu, who's a new physician member of the AFP Board of Directors. And she's going to be talking about the NCSE meeting. And that will be 9 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Pacific. And if you miss it, don't worry. You'll be able to download it, and you can listen to it on the plane as you are coming to Kansas City. And actually, all of my shows you can download and listen on the plane. You just go to blogtalkradio.com/fammedrocks. And the show is also on iTunes. And you can download the shows there to your favorite mobile device and or laptop computer. Also next week, I haven't decided what day it's going to be. It may be Monday, April 30th, which will be the convener himself. It will be Dr. Jay Lee will be coming on, and he's the face and voice of the meeting, and been there, done that, and that's a tough job. But the meeting is in great hands with Dr. Jay Lee coming up next week. And I'm also, I've been hyping this up, I'm also still working on this, you know, hugely exciting, exclusive interview. We'll see how that all pans out with that. So that's all I have for you this evening, or this afternoon, actually. Thank you all for joining me, either live or on the download, the DL. My name is Mike Sevilla. Check out my digital library at familymedicinerocks.com, where I have blog posts, audio podcasts, videos, and so much more. Also, we'll go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/fammedrocks. Follow me on Twitter at Dr. Mike Sevilla, Dr. Mike Sevilla. And that's all I have for you this evening. I will see all of you Sunday night for Dr. Robin Liu here on blogtalkradio.com, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time. Have a great weekend, everybody. Hey, just get ready. Next week is just going to rock around here. Going to have a lot of fun. Have a good rest of the day. Shout out to Seattle, Washington, to STFM Annual Spring Conference out there. You can follow them on Twitter at STFM12. Talk to you all very soon. Have a good night, everybody. We'll see you.
Get real with the people on the dance floor. Now who got the people for the flames? Who can dig the way that I flex on the track? Conclusion rampage. Ricky Rick on point with the knife I stop for my lips. That be rolling the mad joints. So put your hands in the air, cause there's a party over here. So grab yourself a beer. And we can get our FIFA on. I'm with it, so let me put my big brown FIFA on. I'm coming with the disco, I can flip so. I'ma drop a solo tip. Something for the honeys in the crowd. Let me hear it, so I can turn the party out till tomorrow afternoon. Cause when I grip my skills, no one leaves the room. So tell me, can you feel the mask girls coming with the FIFA, FIFA, FIFA? Flip.